social or entitlement programs are frequently blamed for the state of the nation's fiscal health. Just this week, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell pointed to Medicare and Social Security as needing a major overhaul to deal with the national deficit. But questions were raised over how much of an impact Social Security actually has on the deficit and about the effects of recent federal tax cuts. Our next guest is here to talk about Social Security, the budget, and the deficit, and how they all fit together. Stan Colander is an adjunct professor at the McCourt School of Public Policy at Georgetown University. He's also the founder of the blog and website, thebudgetguy.blog, where he writes about taxes, federal programs, and the national budget. Stan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good to be here.
Well, I'll ask you the easy question with, I'm guessing, a more complicated answer. How much does the Social Security system have to do with the annual federal deficit?
Well, Social Security actually reduces the deficit because it's running a surplus. We're taking in currently more money than we're expecting to spend, so the Social Security is reducing the deficit that would otherwise occur. So Mitch McConnell needs to do some mathematical training.
Is the Social Security system isolated in some way from our federal budget?
Not really. It's got a title of off-budget, and until the 1969 or so, it used to be off-budget. That is, it wasn't part of the regular unified budget, as we call it. But back in 1967, Lyndon Johnson created something called the President's Commission on Budget Concepts that recommended that Social Security and all the other trust funds, Medicare, Medicaid, those types of things, be added to the budget to come up with a single unified presentation. So it's not separate anymore. It's spending and its revenues either increase or decrease the deficit like any other program.
And people talk about Social Security being rated if surplus money in Social Security is going into the general budget. Is that a valid way to think about it?
No, it's what people who want to who have a completely misunderstanding. What happens is with any trust fund, Social Security or otherwise, any federal trust fund, if they have a surplus, they must invest it in government bonds. Now, there are chances, there are days, there are weeks, years, when you could make more money in the stock market or investing it in something else, maybe bitcoins. But you'd be increasing the risk rather substantially. So in order to protect the amount that the government's loaning, that's being loaned to the government, they decide to put it in government bonds. U.S. government has never missed a payment. So that, yes, you might be able to make more interest, but how would you like to be a member, relying on Social Security just before the stock market crashed in 2008?
Now, you mentioned the Social Security system having a surplus. And when a lot of people think about Social Security, it's the idea that, okay, at some point, I hear different dates, but at some point in the future, it won't have a surplus. It will be at risk. It won't be able to pay out like it does now. Sort that out for us.
All right. Well, first of all, I think the date you're looking for is 2034. That's the currently projected time when Social Security won't have enough money between drawing down the amount that it's loaned to the government and the amount that it's taking in. 2034 is when Social Security is projected not to have enough to pay 100% of the benefits. I think it would fall to 75% of the benefits if Congress and the President don't agree on a change. Before then, Social Security will start drawing down on its surplus and will actually be running a debt or a deficit, excuse me. But that won't really affect benefits until 2034. Now, keep in mind that given the way the voting power is going, with senior citizens, with boomers getting older and getting into Social Security, with millennials getting older and wanting to get Social Security and wanting to make sure their parents and grandparents keep getting it so they don't move in with them, the support for fixing Social Security will be rather substantial. It'll probably be a combination of using general revenues and maybe some higher Social Security taxes for the people who don't currently pay taxes. That's over about $135,000. If you make that, you don't pay any more than someone paying $60,000 in taxes. But there will be a fix. I am absolutely certain that you shouldn't worry about whether Social Security will have enough cash to pay your benefits at some point in the future, because it will. The politics are such that it almost has to.
Is there a structural problem? A lot of baby boomers living longer, fewer younger workers paying into the system. Is that something that's going to be creating a problem?
Well, there's a little bit of everything, truth in everything you said. Yes, baby boomers are living longer, as will millennials, as will Gen Xers. And Social Security wasn't designed to pay people to live that long, expecting them to live that long. Remember, The average person who was 65 years of age or older when Social Security was created, that person was dead. So now the average age is much higher. So benefits are going to have to be longer. But also, people are going to live longer. They're going to work longer. We've already seen that people don't retire at 65 the way they used to and don't want to, and maybe they can't afford it. So there are some transitional issues here as generations go on. But you're probably going to see millennials working longer because they want to. You're seeing Gen Xers do that already, which means they'll be paying Social Security benefits for a longer period of time.
Talking to Stan Colliner from Georgetown University. He writes at thebudgetguy.blog. We're talking about the federal deficit, Social Security, and more. I want to give a listen to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. We referred to what he was saying this week. Here's a little listen to what he had to say.
It's very disturbing, and it's driven by the three big entitlement programs that are very popular, Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid. That's 70% of what we spend every year. The subject we were just discussing, the funding of the government, is about 30% of what we spend. There's been a bipartisan reluctance to tackle entitlement changes because of the popularity of those programs.
So Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, he says, driving the budget deficit. What do you say to that?
My bottom line comment to that is nonsense. Social Security and Medicare are going up, certainly, and spending is going up, but it's going up as expected. It's not like Congress and the president have agreed to higher benefits anytime recently. But the big driver of the deficit this past year, for example, has been revenues coming in lower than expected. We had a big tax cut in December 2017. It took effect on January 1, 2018. And revenues this year, in the 2018, the year that just ended on September 30, were $202 billion below what was expected before the tax bill was enacted. So had we not had the tax bill, had revenues, had tax laws changed, stayed the same, the deficit would have been $200 billion lower and actually would have been going down rather than up. Instead of 779, it would have been about 560, 570, which would have been down by $90 billion from the previous year. So the real problem here is that we've had a number of tax cuts and haven't realized the revenues we were told were coming because revenues, quote, pay for themselves. We have definitive evidence now in the United States after two tax cuts where we were promised that would happen, and in Kansas where it almost destroyed the economy that the tax cuts did, that revenue cuts don't pay for themselves. Not ever. As long as we keep cutting taxes, you have to expect that the deficit's going to get bigger. And in fact, that's what the projections are. The deficit this year was this past year was $779 billion. For the current year, it's expected to be $1.1 trillion, and that's without any new spending. I mean, that's not without the president's infrastructure bill. It's not with his military parade. It's not with the Space Force that he wants. It's really, I know Mitch McConnell thinks and likes to say, as do conservative think tanks, that it's a spending problem, but it's really, you can't look at this without realizing that it's revenues falling below expectations.
We're talking to Stan Colliner right now, adjunct lecturer at the McCord School of Public Policy at Georgetown University. You can follow him at thebudgetguy.blog, and he tweets at thebudgetguy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about Social Security, our tax system, and the national deficit? Do you have a question for our guest? What do you think should be done, if anything, to bring the annual deficit down? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about comments made by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell about Social Security and its impact on the national deficit. Our guest is Stan Colliner. He's an adjunct lecturer at the McCord School of Public Policy at Georgetown University. He writes about taxes, federal programs, and the national budget on his website, thebudgetguy.blog. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how this all works, the deficit, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? What, if anything, do you think the federal government should do to bring down the deficit? Call 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to your calls. Gail is with us in Fish Creek. Gail, hi.
Hi. Well, besides Social Security, I think they should start raising the corporate tax. They should start raising the tax on the wealthy, and because they have too many loopholes that they can hide money. But another big issue is with Social Security and how what's been happening is that fund is supposed to be gaining interest, and that's what brings that fund into being able to afford all of the payments for everybody, and that cycle continues. But they started pulling money out of that to go into other programs, and they've never put that money back in. So when you pull money out of it, it's like you're saving that in your own. You're not going to make interest on money that's not in there because an IOU isn't going to accrue interest.
Gail, thanks for the call. Stan, is she right? Are they pulling money out? Or as I understood it, you were saying, no, the money comes out of that Social Security surplus in the form of Treasury bonds.
Yeah, Gail got it a little bit off. They don't actually pull money out. The trust fund buys government bonds. The Social Security trust fund buys government bonds. And then the government pays those back as they come due. So they continue to earn interest while they're in place. So it's not as if the principal is going down. The principal is staying the same. They're paying interest on it. And in fact, Gail, as the government, as interest rates go up, the government interest, the amount of interest the government pays will be going up a little bit on new borrowings from the Social Security Trust Fund. You know, the first thing Gail said though is I think exactly right. We talked about it a few minutes ago. That is, one of the fixes for Social Security when the time comes is that the cap on taxes, on the amount of earnings that are taxed, is probably going to come off or at least be raised. I mentioned it earlier. It's currently about $135,000. That is, you only pay tax on the first $135,000 you earn. Now, if you're earning less than that, obviously that won't make much difference. But if you're earning $250,000 or $300,000 a year, you're not paying taxes on about half your income, and that's one of the things that's hurting Social Security. So that will probably change, but I'm going to make a prediction here. Congress and the president typically don't do things until they absolutely have to. So if Social Security is going to have not enough money to pay all its benefits in 2034, Congress and the president will get around to dealing with this in 2033.
Gail, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Melissa in Green Bay. Hello. Melissa, are you there?
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Melissa?
I just wanted to make a comment about this word entitlements that's used as though it's some kind of like a bad word. I would really like for the people that are using that word, like Mitch McConnell, as though it's a derogatory term or an insult to take entitlements, to realize that we've paid into those funds, and I, frankly, I'm proud to draw on the funds and pleased to draw on the funds that I've already paid into. I am entitled to those funds, so I would really like for people to think about them in terms of what they really are, similar to regulations.
Stan, thanks for the call. Is entitlement in some ways a dirty word, Stan?
All right. First, Melissa's in Green Bay, so go Packers. I have to say that. I don't get a chance to do that very often. Entitlement is a pejorative term, or has become a pejorative term. The correct way to refer to these programs is mandatory. Mandatory simply means, in technical budget jargon, that it doesn't have to be reappropriated every year. But entitlement came from the idea that the amount we spend depends on the number of people who qualify under the standard. So suppose we set up a program and said, if you're 18 to 22 and have blonde hair, blue eyes, and attend a four-year school in Wisconsin, you're entitled to $100 a month from the government. It's not so much that it's a pejorative entitlement. It's just a way of referring to or figuring out how many people would qualify for that program. But the correct phrase is mandatory. The opposite of that is discretionary, and that's what McConnell was saying in his statement there. He said, we only get a chance to appropriate or control 30% of the budget. Well, that's not true either. If he had the testicular fortitude, he and his colleagues could actually could look at the rest of the budget if they wanted to, but they don't.
Thanks for that call, Melissa. In our last couple of minutes, Stan, assuming we think it's a problem that the deficit is going up, especially when the economy is doing well, it's a bit unusual. What kind of steps could Congress and the president take to try to bring it back down?
Well, look, let me be very honest and direct about this. We've run up the deficit so much and the national debt so much that, number one, interest on the debt will be the fastest growing portion of the federal budget for the next decade, probably longer. Second, we're talking about permanent trillion-dollar or more deficits, and not the kind that occurred during the Obama administration, which were largely the result of the economy being down, turning down, but permanent legislated and enacted changes in spending and taxes that will result in long-term deficits of $1 trillion or more, as long as you can imagine. Under those circumstances, the idea of balancing the budget is probably gone. The total budget's $4.4 trillion this year. The deficit is $1 trillion, or thereabouts, will be about $1.1 trillion, so you'd have to cut spending by 24% across the board to get there. So don't let any politician of any party tell you that they're going to balance the budget in 10 years. It's not going to happen.
And that's where we'll leave it. Stan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Stan Collender is an adjunct professor at the McCourt School of Public Policy at Georgetown University. He's the founder of the blog and website, thebudgetguy.blog, where he writes about taxes, federal programs, and the national budget. You can find him on Twitter at thebudgetguy.